From the studios of WRPI in Troy, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, good technology and bad intentions, what happens when you mix them all up, and of course, we're like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host for the next 2 hours as we explore this world of the high tech. This is going to be episode number 19 of Little Brother, dated 7th of September 2001. Stay tuned. Little Brother's right around the corner. Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter. The topic is technology. And before we get started, I need to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of the WRPI staff or management, the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, or the RPI Student Union. If you'd like to contribute your point of view, please feel free. The phone number is here at WRPI, area code 518-276-6248, and I look forward to hearing from you. So we'll start up in the usual way with our survey of the contents of the Comp Risks news group on the internet. First item we come up with comes from Peter G. Newman. He says, the head of the Pentagon's missile defense program said he is not fully confident of the basic functionality of the anti-missile system that successfully intercepted a MOP warhead in space last month. This is why the next test of the system, scheduled for October, will be a replay of the July 14th test with no additional complexities, such as putting more decoys aboard the Let me get my tongue untangled here, and then we'll try this one again. With no additional complexities, such as putting more decoys aboard the target missile, Air Force Lieutenant General Ronald Kadish, the director of the Ballistic Missile Defense Organization, told a group of reporters. It is still not totally comfortable for me to say that we can make the hit-to-kill technology work consistently, not even in that simple scenario, Kadish said. Adding later, we still need more reliability in there. I don't know about you, but personally, I don't really like the idea of something that's less than reliable flying around with an armed warhead. What do you think? As many as 40,000 federal tax returns, earlier thought to be only 1,800, and tax payment checks totaling more than $800 million from New England and upstate New York have been lost or destroyed at a processing center operated by the Mellon Bank in Pittsburgh for the Internal Revenue Service. One source was quoted as saying the system was flawed. It gave them incentive to stick the payments in a drawer. It was almost cost-effective for Mellon to do that. There was no reward for timely processing. A somewhat similar case at the IRS Philadelphia Center in the mid-1980s, was also noted. And we have a caller on the line. Let's see who we have. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Yourself?
Oh, not bad. Let me see. I was just listening. You were talking about the anti-missile system.
Yes.
Okay, I was just wondering if you or anybody out there knew how well any of these previous... It's a wonderful idea to shoot down missiles and things before they hit, but I'm just wondering if any of the previous things have ever worked for this. I mean, back in the 80s, they were trying to build something called the Sergeant York, which was an automated tank.
Basically, oh, I remember.
It looked like a tank, but it had like a couple machine guns and computerized radar systems, and the idea was to shoot down aircraft and missiles and things before they hit.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it would occasionally shoot up outhouse fans and things, and...
I remember that debacle, all right.
It was unusual because they just abandoned it completely and said, this will never work.
Right. And yet, here we are years later and some four attempts later.
And I remember 10 years ago during the Gulf War when, of course, everybody was, at least in the news I heard, which...
Patriot missiles.
The Patriot missile, which shot down those, what were the other
Scuds.
Missiles? The what? The Scuds. Scud. Yeah, shot down the Scuds before they arrived. Now it turns out that the Patriots didn't do anything and the Scuds fell apart.
Now, I didn't realize that the Scuds had fallen apart. However, I had heard it rumored that the Patriot missiles had not hit anything.
And the other thing I was just reading in the New York Times a couple days ago was, you know, I think it's obvious to me that, and everybody who's been looking at it, that this anti-missile screen is not going to work as advertised, at least in the immediate future.
Well, that's been the belief for some long time. I mean, there have been a lot of people espousing that point of view, and I think correctly, ever since Reagan suggested it 20 years ago.
Right, and I think the two schools of thought are, one, it's just a way to get a lot of money into the hands of the military-industrial complex people, or B, that maybe the technology will work later, so we should start building a basic structure now. But then I saw and I'm not the kind of person who bashes President Bush. I think too much of that goes on WRPI. Not that I praise him either. I voted for third party. But I saw in the New York Times that the Chinese were objecting to this, saying, we don't want you to build an anti-missile defense, and the Bush administration has told them, that's okay, why don't you just build more nuclear missiles then, and we won't object. And I'm thinking, what a stupid, stupid, stupid thing to do.
That is a very stupid thing to do.
You know, what the world needs, more nuclear missiles. And it's not like the Chinese have extra money for their social programs either. And, you know, if they don't shoot them at us, well, maybe they'll shoot them at Russia or Syria or, God knows, Iran. Who knows? They border on all those countries, or not all of them, but India, Pakistan. You know, I mean, I don't like the idea of the Chinese. Taiwan, you know.
Well, I myself had predicted some 12 years ago, and not that there was anybody in particular to listen to my prediction, but some 12 years ago I had predicted that Russia was not going to be the problem. And this was before the Soviet Union actually fell apart, but rather that China was going to be. And the reason why I had that prediction is because of the fact that we weren't really keeping our eye on China the way we probably ought to have been.
Well, China has surprisingly few nuclear missiles. They could not, I mean, I don't know how many nuclear missiles you would need to destroy the United States, but they have much, everybody's built, claiming they're an international superpower, which of course they are, but on the other hand, they are not comparable to the former Soviet Union in terms of nuclear ICBM capabilities, you know.
It doesn't take very many to mount a sufficient offensive, though.
To ruin your day.
All it takes is one to ruin your day, or so the saying goes.
But I'm just wondering, maybe people out there know about the state of, I don't know what it would be, anti-missile technology?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I would certainly welcome any calls from anybody that has ideas on that at 518-276-6248. But what I would have to say is that if you consider what the feat is that you're attempting to accomplish here, the sky is an awful big area, and you're trying to hit one little itty-bitty thing, and it's a moving target at that, in order to prevent it from hitting civilians. How are you going to do that? It just seems like an unreasonably difficult task.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I don't know much about it, but if you shoot down a nuclear missile, what happens to the warhead? I mean, it doesn't just go away; it's got to fall down on the ground.
Well, no.
Unless you blow
no,
it up
course.
In midair.
Well, if you blow it up in midair, it's still going to fragment, and it doesn't take very long thinking about nuclear materials to get really, really, really depressed because of the fact that you come to the conclusion that there isn't any process that you can do to them that will destroy them. They will convert into something else equally heinous, but you can't destroy them. And if you expose them to a high explosive device, such as what I have to assume is on these anti-missile missiles, what will happen is you'll end up spreading the nuclear material over the landscape. So instead of everybody dying quickly in a nuclear explosion, everybody dies slowly of radiation poisoning and plutonium ingestion. it makes you stop and think, doesn't it?
No, yeah.
Don't forget to start again.
No, well, I'm just wondering, couldn't they, you know, anyway, I don't know. It's just, on one hand, technology can do so much. On the other hand, there's so many things it cannot do. And I think we're kind of confusing, we're kind of assuming since, I don't know, computer technology and surveillance technology can do such awesome feats, for better or worse. Well, can't we shoot down missiles easily? And I don't think the answer
can't.
Is, yeah.
These things don't translate well into the physical world. If you think about it, most of the effects that are had by computers are inside of an artificial world. Yeah, okay, they give people ideas of what they should probably be doing at any given instant. For example, a computer takes some numbers, sprays them on a piece of paper, and mechanically stuffs it in an envelope and sends it to somebody, and somebody opens it up and says, "Oh, I ought to pay these guys," but the computer didn't actually do anything very much in the physical universe. All it did was spray some stuff on a piece of paper, and a person had to take care of the rest of it. And that person was hired to do that, and so this person that does this has the suggestion in their mind that this is what they ought to be doing, is taking this piece of paper that the computer just spit out, folding it up, stuffing it in an envelope, and dropping it in a mailbox, whereupon another person comes by and picks it up. And so the chain goes on until it eventually gets to the person who's got to pay the bill. But the fact of the matter is, the computer did very little. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yep.
And that's the context that computers work in most of the time. They very rarely have to deal with real-world scenarios. And when they do, they usually have to do so under a very, very tightly controlled environment. A factory is a very tightly controlled environment. If you have computers running robots, the robots have got a handful of useful sensors, but that's about it. If you pass the wrong part to that robot, it would fail. If you passed anything that was slightly out of the norm to that robot, it would fail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what we're doing here, is we're expecting what is effectively a very expensive one-time-use robot to eliminate something whose behavior is not necessarily perfectly predictable.
Right. Okay, well, anyway.
So that's where that goes.
All right, I'll let you get on to, like, the second and third news story, but with the first one, it was just, you know, they've been trying for years to build things that shoot things down, you know, automatically, and I've never heard of any that actually work, you know? I mean,
I have my doubts that it ever will.
Yeah.
I really do.
It's just...
Let me rephrase that. I see it as potentially possible that eventually somebody may get it, but we're not anywhere near it yet. It's so far off in the future that you may as well not even think about expecting to see it in your lifetime.
Well, the other thing that somebody pointed out to me is, you know, if the whole idea of this is, quote, to prevent rogue states from shooting missiles into our country.
Ah, before you begin on that one, let me define rogue state.
Good.
A rogue state is those states whose policies disagree with ours.
Well, I agree with that, you know, but on the other hand, the whole idea is some...
Unless they make us money.
Well, I think the implication is that there's a weird terrorist state or two or three out there that whose actions are so crazy we can't predict, and so therefore we'd better be able to shoot down their missiles. And somebody asked me, well, why would they shoot, if they wanted to build an atom, if they wanted to, you know, put an atom bomb in the United States, why in the world would they shoot it in a missile? You know, you could put it in a boat and park it in New York City Harbor, you know, or you could just, how many illegal aliens are smuggled into this country from Mexico and China every year? Thousands upon thousands, you know?
And not only that, but you don't really need an atom bomb to do a severe quantity of damage.
Right.
Take a look at the incident with the World Trade Center, and take a look at what happened in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those were chemical bombs.
Right, right.
When I say chemical, I mean...
Nitromethane fuel.
High explosive. High explosive is basically what I'm looking at here.
Right, right. And those were, you know, the whole... I don't know what they built the bomb out of for the Twin Tower bombings, but the one in Oklahoma City was built out of nitromethane and fuel oil.
Right.
You know, which is fertilizer and racing fuel and a
Right. Listen, I got another caller on the line here.
Okay.
So I'm going to move on.
I will listen.
Thank you for calling
and
thank you for listening. Hello, caller. You're on.
I really didn't want to be on.
Oh, all right. Well, let me take you back off then, and I'll put some music on, and we'll take you off the air, all right?
Thank you.
Okay, and with that note, we will just bring some music up. You're listening to WRPI Troy. The show is Little Brother.
It's all a day.
is 91.5 FM WRPI Troy. The show is Little Brother, a show about technology and Big Brotherism and how they connect. So if you'd like to contribute your opinions, the phone numbers here at WRPI, or the phone number is area code 518-276-6248. Also, if you'd rather not voice the opinion yourself, if you'd like, I can put my voice to your opinion. Send me an email. My email address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That address again, critter@verizoneatspoop.com. And lastly, if you want to send me snail mail at the station, send it to Little Brother, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. This item was contributed by NewsScan. Oh, we have another caller already. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, I have a couple of things to make about what we were talking about before about the shooting down missiles.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that technology, the research and development of technology should be put into alternative energy, things like that, solar energy, wind power, so we end our reliance on foreign oil, and then we wouldn't have so many problems with, dictators like Saddam Hussein if we weren't so reliant on oil, and that's our whole reason for going to war over there in the past.
Sir, I could not agree with you more.
We need to do more in as far as legalizing hemp.
Mm-hmm.
For alternative energy sources, as well as paper. There's so much that needs to be done instead of putting more into weapon systems.
Yes, and one of the things that is particular, I'm going to turn your phone down a little bit here because I'm getting a nasty rattle off of it, but I will bring you back up in a second, okay?
Okay.
One of the things that I personally find extremely disturbing is that it seems to me like most of the research that is going into alternative energy is being done not by corporate entities at all, but by private individuals. Now, this may, on the face of it, not seem like such a bad deal, but the problem is that the corporate entities are the ones that have the money that can be poured into the research so that the research could go far. But unfortunately, they have the money by making money, and the method of making money generally goes with a concentration to the short term, and the short term gain, it doesn't have any alternative energy in the picture.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. So now, I don't know what the answer is here. All I can do is hope that maybe somebody with a philanthropic streak might back some useful project. I've seen some interesting projects that have been done by individuals. Amongst the magazines that I read, one is called Home Power, and it talks about exactly this sort of thing, alternative energy, and bringing it to your home. They talk about solar, and they talk about wind, hydro, and one of the things that particularly caught my attention was a project where a fellow was going around collecting the used grease from the fast food restaurants in his place, or in his immediate area, and he was refining his own biodiesel from this. And that's what he ran his car on. He ran his car on biodiesel manufactured from fast food waste. How's that? Sounds to me like we're losing you. Are you still there? Nope, sounds like we lost that caller, and what a shame, too, because brought up actually one of my favorite soapboxes there. However, if there's more interest in that particular topic, I'd love to hear from anybody out there. Area code 518-276-6248 is the number at WRPI. So I guess I'm going to proceed on into this. We have another caller. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, I'm back again.
Ah, good.
Driving along here on the interstate on my cell phone, so you got to bear with me.
I understand completely. It sounded to me like you were like you're using an older analog phone. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I should barely hear you on my speakerphone.
Oh, okay. I was saying that it sounded to me like you were using an older analog phone.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay.
Never mind. It was just a passing comment more than anything else. It sounded like an analog connection before. You move into a digital area now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, you sound a lot better now.
Yeah. I think we need to do a favor,
No, I'm afraid we lost you again. Yep, there's the static. All right, I'm gonna drop you for now. As much as I'd like to talk to you, if you get into a better area, give me another call. All right? Nope, I think we lost that caller again. All right. Well, rather than fight the phone system here, let's continue on. Okay, security consultant Jeremiah Grossman was able to break through Microsoft's Hotmail and Passport protection schemes with just one line of code. Microsoft has patched the code, but Grossman says he could do it again in 8 hours of work. His hacking experiment used a cross-site scripting technique that attaches invasive code onto programs used to make web pages more interactive. Grossman calls them a breeding ground for new types of web security vulnerabilities. And Sean Herman of the Computer Emergency Response Team at Carnegie Mellon University says it's easy to dream up very, very bad scenarios. We'll probably talk more about that topic later. I have some things with Microsoft discussing the vulnerabilities to the Passport system. Computer World reports that a Microsoft letter-writing campaign opposing the antitrust actions used the names of dead people. The Utah Attorney General, who received the letters, was not amused. Other attorneys general received duplicate letters with similar problems. Microsoft says they didn't do it, but pointed to Citizens Against Government Waste, which is leading the effort. The risk is that any sufficiently automated letter-writing system is going to eventually screw up and get caught. Dead people don't handwrite letters. Actually, I did get an email from one of my listeners on this very same topic. This is what you call astroturfing. Astroturfing is when you have a corporate entity attempting to imitate a grassroots movement. They wanted to make it look, or at least this is my take on it, is that they were trying to make it look as though all of these satisfied Microsoft users were trying to get the government off of Microsoft's back. Microsoft has had several of their days in court, and probably there will be more to come. We'll have to see where that comes on, or where that goes to. I said it years ago when the whole thing started to come down, and I'll say it again now. It is my opinion that really the government went after Microsoft for the wrong reason. A more appropriate approach would have been to go after them for the mercantility of their product. Personally, I don't think a product that crashes every time you cross your eyes at it qualifies as merchantable. Okay, we're going to take a moment for a public service announcement. In the United States, millions of dogs and cats are dumped at shelters and pounds because they are no longer wanted. Millions more are born on the streets or abandoned by uncaring owners. If you are considering a companion animal, please, rather than buying it at a pet shop or a breeder, try visiting your local animal shelter and adopt a homeless animal. Be responsible. Have your pet neutered or spayed. For information on breed rescue groups and low-cost spay-neuter services, you can call the local SPCA at area code 518-465-2061. That number again, 518-465-2061. Thank you. Stuart Prescott submitted this to the Risk Digest. He says, I noticed today that the Microsoft Windows Update site was offering a service pack 2 for Internet Explorer. Oh, we have another caller. Let's see what we've got on the line here. Hello, caller. Are you there?
How's it going?
It's going well.
You're
on the air.
You might want to take me off air.
All righty, I can do that. I'll come back to you in a minute.
Okay.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Noticed today that the Microsoft Windows Update site was offering a Service Pack 2 for Internet Explorer, and since a number of our machines here use Internet Explorer 5.5, I decided to have a look at what functionality it offered. As with all downloads from Windows Update, they are cryptographically signed. However, this time some of the components were signed by Internet Explorer Beta Division with a certificate of authority of Internet Explorer Beta Division. The certificates, by the way, are not trustworthy. The risks? Naturally, there are issues here in verifying that these updates are actually from Microsoft. Then there are the risks of users saying no to installing the badly signed bits and possibly ending up with a more broken Internet Explorer installation. Or there's the risk of users becoming used to dismissing error messages. Didn't realize that Microsoft Internet Explorer could become even scarier with time. And that item, like I said, was from Stuart Prescott. Going to run some more music here, and we will be back. You're listening to Little Brother.
You can't always bet your bottom dollar. Dreams are gonna visit you tonight. Cloudy visions of the past and future. Throwing shadows on your inner life. Going down on the city. Skyline turns a pale shade of blue. Up and down it seems we run forever. Through the day I always wonder you too. Ride around in another place to picture. Black and white is just a point of view.
you're listening to 91.5 FM WRPI, the show's little brother. The topic is technology. My name is Chuck Ritter. And your phone calls are welcome at area code 518-276-6248. In Sweden, a new type of directory service will soon be introduced by the company... Yeah, that actually seems to be their name. Aha. www.ahhaaa.com. You will be able to call this service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, give the license plate number of a car, and they will immediately tell you the name, the address, and the phone number of the person registered as the owner of that car. If the owner is a business, they will also tell you the number of the employees, or the number of employees, and the annual revenue. The service states a number of benefits, such as calling the driver who just cut you off to complain, locate parking violators, or notify an owner whose car has been broken into. Last but not least, the article suggests that if you find another driver attractive, the service would make it easier to make contact. It does not take a criminal mastermind to see the opportunities for abuse, road rage, stalking, fraud, etc. One could argue that this information has always been available to the public in Sweden, albeit from different sources. However, with the modern technology deregulation of telecommunication services and the ubiquitousness of mobile phones, the information is instantly available and therefore the opportunities to act on impulse are much greater. We have another caller. Let's see if this person actually wants to talk on the air. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Let's try it this way. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, you had a caller earlier that was talking about alternative power sources.
Yes, sir.
And I noticed it was interesting that you didn't talk about nuclear power. Although it's not an alternative power source, it's a very viable power source for this country that is used in a much larger proportion in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
There's over, I believe, 30 different plants on the docket to be approved for building in the United States this year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just curious as to why this wasn't touched on.
Okay. Well, you may consider it a personal bias because I'm going to state for the record that I personally am not I'm not comfortable with nuclear power. However, if you want to talk about the benefits, please by all means wear it out. I try to keep this program as much of an open forum as I can. So if you would like to discuss it.
Why do you say you don't approve of it?
I didn't say I don't approve of it. I said I'm not comfortable with it. There's a very important distinction there, and I can't say that my discomfort with it is actually rational.
I've worked in nuclear power for over 10 years now,
mm-hmm.
and I can see countless advantages to it over many fossil fuel powers that we use in the United States right now.
Mm-hmm.
The waste generated from it is truly minimal in comparison to the damage we do to the environment every day with fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the largest objection I've ever heard about it. In fact, there's a couple power plants in this area alone that are nuclear power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're going to find that they are scattered all across the country because, as you've pointed out, it is economically feasible. At least, and for this particular country, because we do have uranium reserves. You are correct in saying that it's not a perfect solution because it does run off of a supply that's even less renewable than fossil fuels are. Fossil fuels eventually, a couple million years down the road, will regenerate themselves. Nuclear reserves will not. At the rate we're using them up, that's a moot point. So I think that's where you were going, yes?
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nuclear power with a properly run plant is going to last for an extraordinary amount of time as compared to fossil fuels. It's much cleaner, less impact on the environment. You can gain more power from it for size.
Mm-hmm.
The advantages to it are countless over fossil fuels. Alternative fuels are on their way up, but I think we have a long way in development before those become a viable solution. If you take, say, France or Japan, for example, they run a much higher percentage, say, in 70 or 80% on nuclear power as compared to the U.S., which is around 10 to 15%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely true. And I could also point out that I've seen in discussion of alternative energy, I have seen an example where I wish I could pinpoint this one for you because I only remember a hint and a taste of it. I don't remember the exact details. I recall that there was a nuclear power plant in Germany where they've solved the problem of a potential meltdown. In an experiment, they built a small plant. There was some particular process in how they pre-treated the fuel. I believe it involved encasing the pellets of fuel in ceramic material of some variety. And they were able to actually turn all of the cooling systems in the plant off. And if you do that as I'm sure you're aware, in a conventional nuclear power plant, if you turn all the cooling systems off, how long does it take before you reach a meltdown?
It depends on the system. If you're referring to something like a graphite-cooled reactor like the Soviet Union uses, there's different types of moderators in there, and that one has a positive coefficient of reactivity, which causes it to actually go up.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be the Chernobyl effect that we had.
Exactly.
But in the U.S., we use pressurized water reactors most exclusively that have a negative temperature coefficient of reactivity, so it will actually shut itself down.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ours are inherently safe in the manufacturing. This was developed over years. The stringent controls on any of the reactor plants built in the United States are just amazing, and they're continually getting stymied in their process of building and having these plants approved because special interest groups are shutting them down all the time, requiring them to prove that it is safe beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Which is an impossible thing to prove.
Exactly.
You could not prove that same thing about you could not prove that same thing about many of the fossil fuel plants that are currently in production. There's when you have fossil fuels, particularly if you have particularly volatile ones. Some of these run on natural gas, for example. The potential for fire is enormous. The potential for explosion is there. If you have a steam unit, the potential for a boiler explosion is there. Of course, that exists with the nuclear plants also. But I think that the reason that people turn their backs on it and ignore that that particular hazard is because it's a hazard that they're used to living with. A good chunk of the houses in the United States have natural gas piped right into them. And nobody gives it a second thought, really.
Well, we've become used to that type of fuel process and that type of energy source.
Right.
The average person in the United States, their take on nuclear power is Chernobyl, the Three Mile Island incident, Silkwood, the movie, and then The Simpsons.
Yes.
To where nuclear power is made into a joke.
Well, unfortunately, as much as I hold the view that you can't take seriously Simpsons, it is after all a parody. Many people will let that kind of thing shape their point of view about things, and you're right, they make a mockery of it. I guess because it's a fairly easy target.
Well, actually, Matt Groening, the creator of it, used to be a Navy nuke. So he's kind of making fun of nuclear power and the Navy nuclear system in general.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a inside joke on his end.
Well, let me just say one last thing, and then I'm going to move on because I have another caller on the line here. But what I was going to say to finish off is that something that you have to keep in mind is that you never hear about the technology that works right. When something goes wrong, particularly if it goes very wrong, and Chernobyl went very wrong, and Three Mile Island went very wrong, but if technology goes wrong, especially if it goes really wrong, you know about it, but you never hear about the technology that's been working perfectly. And I would say that a lot of people are completely unaware of the presence of the nuclear power plants that are out there.
For that exact reason,
mm-hmm. Because they're working correctly. So yes, you are correct in pointing out my laxness on that one. I did point out the major shortcomings of it, I pointed out one. The other one is that the waste. Yes, it is a minimal quantity, but it is particularly toxic. That's about it.
Okay.
So all right. Thank you very much for calling, and thank you very much for listening.
Anytime. Thanks.
All right. Okay. And it appears in the meantime we lost that other caller. However, he or she is perfectly welcome to call back if the inclination hits at area code 518-276-6248. Okay, seems like last week we discussed the Air Force Academy, an officer there accidentally sending confidential information about some 40 cadets to all 4,400 cadets at the school, and this incident sounds suspiciously like a Sirkam worm infection of the officer's system. First off, this is according to J.D. Dyson, first off, he says, I doubt the email is typically utilized to send out such reports since the confidential information would never be sent in the clear. Second, how else can the Air Force explain the means by which the mail was so readily disseminated? I don't believe we're being told the whole story here, and I believe an officer is being let off the hook when he should be nailed for actions that are tantamount to criminal negligence. Excellent call. I didn't realize, I didn't think of the possibility of it being a Sirkam virus because that's been several weeks since we dealt with that one. But yes, it certainly is. We have another caller on the line. Hello, caller, are you there? Hello?
Hello.
All right.
Hello?
You're very choppy.
Oh, sorry about that.
Oh, okay, it just cleared up. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, the main reason I didn't bring up nuclear energy before is because of the waste.
I'm sorry, caller. We lost you again. If you wouldn't mind calling back if you get into a better area, that would be absolutely magnificent because I want to have this conversation with you. Because I think it is a particularly, especially in this country where my understanding is that we have one of the highest per capita energy uses in the world. So it's certainly pertinent that this be discussed on a technology show. Because why do we use so much energy? It's our technology. I'm going to take a moment here for a letter I got from a listener. This came from Defarge, who says, boy, you are right. Verizon really does eat poop. I work for a public institute, and Verizon allegedly supplies our connection to other institutions and the Internet for the public's use, not to mention the connection for everything we do. 2 days without a connection, hundreds of angry people, what a pain. This has been going on and off for well over a year. There, I feel better. Well, it sounded like Defarge had a fundamental need to vent, and I can certainly understand that. My own personal experience with Verizon is not a particularly pleasant one, which is ultimately how I ended up with the email address I have. That email address, by the way, if you would like to send me email, I welcome it. My address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. Well, we come back to the topic of nuclear power again, or I would come back to it, except that we have another caller on the line. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Listen, my axe to grind is I'm a Reconsider member, going back to your earlier show a couple hours ago. And
Can you turn your radio down?
Oh, yeah, I surely can. And I'm wondering what the demographics are. Have you guys done any research on how many people actually listen to this? And I guess, like you said, it's a cold underbelly. People just don't bother to call in who listen, who already share our opinions and our beliefs. And I think what we need to do is find some forum to get these ideas out there because it's frightening to me. I agree with everything that I hear. I like one guy in the early afternoons, and you guys on the fellow that's on there late on Friday, I'm with it 100%, and it seems like we're singing in the wilderness. And I think basically I'm going to get off the air and turn my radio up so I can hear what you have to say about that. Is that cool? This is Dave up in Galway, New York.
Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Okay,
thank you very
bye-bye.
Much for calling. Thank you very much for listening also. And certainly the kudos are very greatly appreciated. I can't speak for WRPI as a whole, but I believe that you will find that opinion is shared. And as for the question of whether or not we're whistling in the wilderness, I don't know. I don't know what the demographics are. Obviously, being a non-commercial radio station, we're not particularly driven by our demographics. We did have at one point in time. Actually, we do have a map hanging in the studio here that has a bunch of tags in it showing where people have called in from. But I think that was more. I think the point of that map has been more to show how far spread out the audience is. Unfortunately, I fear that it doesn't have a whole lot of density. Regardless. I think that it's far better that we be here whistling in the wilderness in the hopes that somebody does hear us than sitting back and doing nothing. And we have another caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I have 2 points.
Go ahead.
The first one I'd like to get your reaction to. I'm sure you saw the series that was in the New York Times this week about the cookies.
I did hear about it. I would say that the information that I read regarding cookies is not really anything particularly new.
No, I didn't think of that. That's not why I brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not new, no.
It is important, though.
It is very
important.
Oh, yeah, it's a big deal. It's, invasion of privacy.
Potentially, yes, it is.
Yeah. So, anyway, my point about it was that I don't think that the quote, industry, unquote, should be able to get away with calling this thing cookies, which makes it sound not only benign, but fun. It's a fun thing.
It does.
So I thought of an alternative.
Okay.
Canker.
What do you call it?
Canker.
Canker?
Yeah.
As in a sore.
That's right.
Uh-huh. That's
actually
interesting.
It's this nagging thing that you so hard to get rid of because it's such a difficult place.
Yes, yes, of course.
Inside your mouth, and it's just super invasive, nasty, filthy thing.
Yes. Well, not that it necessarily makes the situation any better, but well, I can kind of give a clue as to just exactly how the term cookie came along. It really didn't come from the industry as such, so much as from the people down in the trenches, the coders, who had to come up with a name of some sort for this thing, and it contained a message, and the message was generally closed, so they called it a cookie. They named it after a fortune cookie,
I
agree. In the long term, it's probably not the best term.
Did him a big favor.
Hmm?
Did whoever came up with that did the industry a big favor?
You're probably right.
By making it, it sounds like something sweet and delicious, right?
Right. And
it's it's like calling rape an executive sexual decision.
Oh, jeepers!
You
put it in that light. You really do. You do really drive it way down, which is probably what needs to be done.
It's just a matter of degrees, but it's the same thing. It's dressing something up to make it look like something that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to invade people's lives and to get more control of them,
mm-hmm.
which is what rape is.
Okay, I might say that I think that might be taking it a shade too far, but
that's
certainly
okay.
I
don't mind being accused of extremism. That's
but
fine.
Certainly all of the logic behind it does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for calling.
Can I make one more point, though?
Yes, you can.
When you were talking about the nuclear, there was another piece, maybe about a month or two ago in the New York Times, a long piece about how the studies that are being done for the nuclear waste storage in the Southwest
mm-hmm.
that the government, it's such a huge undertaking just to study itself,
mm-hmm.
that the arm of the government, I guess it involves several arms of the government, the EPA, the NRC, and you know, probably five or six others.
Three or four whole alphabets there.
Right, and it involves so many laws and regulations and rules and sub, you know, different categories of things that they hired a huge law firm, that is the government did, to handle, you know, to help them find their way through all the regulations,
mm-hmm.
To make sure that supposedly that, you know, everything was on the up and up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the purpose of the article in the Times was to bring out the fact that the same law firm also represents the leading organization of the nuclear power industry in their negotiations with the government on this very issue.
Isn't that interesting?
Can you
say conflict of interest?
Oh, well, of course. I mean, that was the whole purpose of it. Of the piece,
I do need
was to show that, you know, I mean, there are no words to describe how glaring it is.
I do need to interrupt you for just a moment,
uh-huh.
to say that you are listening to 91.5 FM WRPI in Troy. And you can continue. I'm sorry. There's a legal requirement there.
Okay. Well, you know, to the extent that this law firm, and you can imagine they didn't want to speak to the reporter at all, but to the extent that they did, when they were asked whether this was a conflict of interest, oh, they said no, absolutely not. We're able to keep our clients separate, and you know.
I don't buy it.
So that no conflict will occur, and period.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know, you know, what you can say about somebody who, I mean, that's like giving a big finger to the world to say that. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Because it's so obvious. It is so obvious that there isn't anything that they can say except we're doing it tough.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, anyway, I said that partly in response to one of your earlier callers,
mm-hmm.
who started to talk about how well the industry is regulated, and I just, you know, I almost lost my cookies when I heard that. All right.
Well, you know, it's like I said, I personally, I can't even remember what the exact verbiage was. I had...
you were uncomfortable.
Yes. I'm not particularly comfortable with nuclear power, but...
there's nothing wrong
I can't
with
back
nuclear
it up with
power. It's nuclear waste that's the problem. Nuclear power...
Very good point.
You know, with the Earth, the solar system is fueled by nuclear power.
It is.
There's nothing wrong with nuclear power. But if you try to, you know, if we
solar
try to,
power is nuclear power.
Yeah, right. That's right. You know, that's the foundation of life on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing wrong with nuclear power. But if you try to generate it yourself, you have this waste, which, you know, since the Earth is not, you know, 87,000 trillion degrees hot like the sun, it doesn't get destroyed.
Right, and something that needs to be borne in mind there also is that there are two distinct varieties of nuclear reactions that produce two distinct different sets of byproducts.
Mm-hmm.
The sun is a hydrogen fusion reaction versus any reaction, for the most part, any reaction that we've attempted to use and harness for production of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Has been a uranium fission reaction.
That's a good point.
And the byproducts of a hydrogen fusion reaction is a lot of helium. Well, that make your voice squeaky. It doesn't do much else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a particularly harmful product. But the side effects of a fusion reaction are... the byproducts, I should say, of a fusion reaction are anything imaginable. you can take it all depends on where the neutron hits the particular atom being fizzed.
Yeah, I'm going to get cut off because I'm at a payphone.
Alrighty.
I'm going to try putting in 20 cents and see if they'll be kind to me.
Okay, give it a shot.
Okay. Yeah, you're making a very good point, you know, and you really do have to make a distinction between the way the sun does it and the way people are trying to do it. And, you know, if they would just take their time and figure out how the sun does it, try to duplicate that so that it's the end result is mainly beneficial. Keeping in mind that the sun is not entirely beneficial, it can be very dangerous.
Well, yeah, if you spend too much time out in it, you can get a nasty burn. Well, I've got some callers lined up on hold here, so I'm going to move on here.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling.
Stop calling them cookies. They're cankers.
All right. Thank you for calling, and thank you for listening.
Bye.
And you are listening to Little Brother. We're going to take a moment's break here, and there are two callers on hold who we will address when we come back. You're listening to Little Brother on WRPI. WRPI Troy, and the other caller I had on the line was not actually wishing to go on the air. However, I dedicate this song to him. This is the Ramones. listening to Little Brother on 91.5 FM, WRPI. This Ramones going out with a title I can't say on the air to the PMRC. All right, let's get back to business here. Let's bring some music back here. As I was saying before, I wanted to talk about another item on nuclear power here. This is from the Risks Digest. I may never ever make it off the Risks Digest the way things are going tonight. We have another caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Are you there? Hello? Okay, our caller seems to have gone missing on us. So we will hope that that person calls us back. This came from the Risks Digest from Pete Mellor, who says that the Temelin nuclear power plant was activated again on August 12, 2001, this is in the UK, after 3 months of repairs to a vibrating turbine. The relaunch of the Temelin provoked hostile reactions from some Australian politicians and anti-nuclear environmental activists. News leaked on August 15th about new vibrations in the turbine, which caused an 18-hour shutdown. However, plant officials claim the shutdown was used to balance rotary part of the turbine. The reactor on August 19th was automatically switched off due to a software error in a steam delivery regulator. Temelin opponents claim that this shutdown was the 23rd since the beginning of operating tests. According to the Temelin management, the shutdowns are a normal part of the testing procedure and are not related to nuclear safety problems. Temelin CEO František Hazuchi said that Temelin is exceptional only in one respect. It's the very first nuclear power plant where its testing is being broadcast live to the public. NewsScan reports that some legal scholars are suggesting a website vandalized by hacker attacks may itself be legally liable if its customers suffer damages and if the site was negligent in maintaining security. Law professor Margaret Jane Radden of Stanford University predicts that a court is going to say it is negligent of you not to implement preventative measures if they are reasonably effective and affordable. No reported court decisions have dealt with the issue, but Radden says that the lawsuits in the near future are highly likely to be lodged against companies and network providers targeted by denial of service attacks. That from the New York Times of August 24th. Also from the New York Times, submitted to us by Martin Cohen, the email version contained an ad offering to teach you a language while you are driving. Imagine trying to learn an irregular verb while negotiating difficult traffic. Interesting. Got another caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Are you there? Hello, caller. I would take that as a no. Okay. Bring the music back up, and we'll carry on. Nick Brown submitted to the Risks Digest that the PBC is reporting confidential files containing the identities of alleged pedophiles and their victims were found on a secondhand computer bought from Bristol University. Not a new risk, but the first time I've seen this particular combination. Does your local social welfare department, public hospital, or police station have a statutory duty in the interest of taxpayers to sell rather than destroy old equipment? And if so, is there a mandatory procedure for securely erasing the disk first? Oh, let's see. An anonymous programmer found a way to decrypt Microsoft Reader ebooks on Windows PC, but it's not released it. Let's see. What else have we got going on here? Simon Waters reports that he's been receiving reports from an AOL user of emails not getting through. Checking log files shows that AOL's mail server had received all the messages correctly, but queries to AOL's Postmaster account received no response. Web pages run by AOL users suggest the cause of this is data may have triggered a suspicious relaying trap within the AOL server. Assuming this is the case, it's interesting that AOL chose to drop the mail silently, with all the information required to make such a decision is available to the mail transport agent before the body of the mail is sent. Thus, AOL could choose to refuse the mail politely, using less bandwidth and informing the sender of the problem, but prefer to waste bandwidth and delete emails silently. The risk? Assuming that AOL cares enough about their subscriber's email not to delete it without notifying the sender or recipient, or answer questions on the topic. The only way I can see to mitigate the risk is to switch to another internet provider. Hello, caller, are you there?
No, I'm not a caller.
Oh, all right. Hold the phone and I'll come back to you. Okay. Normally, eBay will not disclose the email address of its users. When you wish to send email to an eBay user, eBay provides a proxy service accepting the email and then forwarding it to the recipient. However, if the mail host for the recipient is down or unavailable, the sender will get a warning email saying the original message could not be delivered, but the system will go on trying with the email address of the recipient. Another example of not thinking things all the way through. Let's see what else we have here. Well, we'll come back in a minute. You're listening to Little Brother on WRPI.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of charm, but there's a long stem rose.
I can't believe the amount of music I'm having to throw down on the turntable this evening. It's just outrageous. So what do we got next? FBI agents raided a Muslim web hosting business on Wednesday, a Dallas area television station reported. Witnesses outside the building told iViews.com that an entire building, which housed the business along with several others, had been evacuated and surrounded by at least 50 federal agents. Along with agents from the State Department, the U.S. Customs, and U.S. Secret Service, the FBI began their search at Infocom Corporation, based in Richardson, Texas, earlier this morning. And this came out on the 5th, so this is Wednesday morning. Let's see. The company hosts websites for more than 500 other companies, including several major Muslim American organizations, such as the Council on American-Islamic Relationships, the Islamic Society of North America, the Islamic Association for Palestine, and the Holy Land Foundation. The raid comes 1 week after Bank One Corporation shut down the bank account for Holy Land Foundation without explanation. The raid also comes just 2 weeks after two Muslim bashers openly called upon the FBI in a Wall Street Journal column to shut down the websites of IAP and HLF. Stephen Emerson and Daniel Pipes wrote in the August 13th issue, "The time has come for the U.S. to support Israel in rolling back the forces of terror. The federal authorities should use the tools it already has in closing down these websites and organizations," they wrote. WFAA reported that the raid could take as long as 2 to 3 days, as agents might seize massive amounts of company records. Bayan Elashi, the owner of Infocom, told reporters that he did not know why the FBI was there. "They were just waiting for them to tell us what this is about," said Elashi. Absolutely inexcusable. Completely unbelievable. Well, I don't know if it's unbelievable, but definitely inexcusable. This is racism. This is wrong. Any questions? Okay. If you do have any questions after that, the number here is 518-276-6248. Your opinions are welcome. We'll be right back. this item seems fitting since the opening salvo this evening was fired over the anti-missile missile system. This opening is kind of nice, and it fits. This comes from the editorial page of USA Today. They said, forget Star Wars, the moniker for missile defense, which looms ahead as one of the classic Washington battles, pitting skeptical Democrats in Congress against a determined president and his Republican congressional leaders. Hold on. Let's stop right there. Don't forget, there's Greens and Libertarians out there, and there are many others as well, who would like to approach this thing with a greater deal of common sense. And I think that it's kind of the Republicans against everybody else. Anyway, it has already received tons of ink and airtime. There's another battle ahead that has been virtually ignored in newspapers and on the airwaves that will dwarf Star Wars. Call it Spectrum Wars. Here's the basics. The world is moving rapidly towards a new era in telecommunications, the wireless world. Already close to reality in Europe, this new world will integrate cell phones, personal data assistants such as Palm Pilots, computers, and the Internet, allowing one to communicate with anybody and get instant information from anywhere, no matter where one is in the world. This kind of communication is known in the trade as the third generation of wireless communications, or 3G for short. Despite the American leadership role in telecommunications, we've been moving much more slowly than the rest of the world in this area, mainly because we've not allocated the space on the electromagnetic spectrum for this purpose. We risk losing our leadership role. Moreover, the longer we wait, the greater the chance that Europe and the rest of the world that they will pick the common spot on the airwaves for this purpose. If we do not have that space available, it will create the prospect that people will be able to communicate easily with each other in the rest of the world, but not with us, and that our equipment won't work, or at least not as well, when we travel abroad. The Federal Communications Commission and the U.S. Department of Commerce are supposed to carve out appropriate territory for this purpose on the spectrum and auction it off, with the proceeds starting to go to the public treasury by September 30th, 2002. No way. With analog TV, digital TV, satellite TV, cell phones, emergency service, police, and fire communications, etc., we have a serious shortage of spectrum. Finding enough space for the United States to move expeditiously towards 3G and have it work without interference from other uses of the airwaves, or vice versa, is proving to be very difficult. Congress is moving to fill the vacuum with ideas of its own. Representatives Chip Pickering, a Republican from Massachusetts, and Fred Upton, a Republican of Michigan, have come up with a plan. They would like to take prime spectrum real estate used by the Pentagon for its combat, national security, and other communications for 3G, auction it off. Their estimates are that it would raise between $25 and $45 billion, while outside analysts value it up to double that amount. Use several billion of the proceeds to pay for the military's transition to other spaces on the band, and put the rest into a fund for military modernization. The proposal has rapidly picked up support and momentum for several reasons. Many lawmakers see it as a twofer. With no budget leeway available for defense budget increases, the plan can solve the 3G problem and their post-tax cut political problem at the same time. Broadcasters also offered enthusiastic early support for their own parochial reason. If the military spectrum is allocated to 3G, the pressure on broadcasters to accelerate their transition to digital television and give back their existing analog spectrum to auction off for the public's benefit will presumably decline. But hold on. Yet other lawmakers are beginning to raise questions about a huge infusion of money into federal coffers, all to be used for defense. Representative Ed Markey, a Massachusetts Democrat, the most knowledgeable congressman on telecommunications issue, is drafting a bill that would use some portion of this windfall for a digital dividends trust fund, with income from it going to educational technology, public broadcasting's conversion to digital television, and the expansion of broadband communications to rural areas and the less fortunate, and a national endowment for children's television. The military is no passive observer here either. Pentagon officials are skeptical, to say the least, about losing their spectrum space, which is crucial for almost everything they will do in the 21st century. They want lots of money for a long transition, and most importantly, they reasonably demand an equally useful slice of spectrum for their purposes. The idea of some key Pentagon actors give defense the analog spectrum that broadcasters have pledged to return to the taxpayers in 2006 after they were given free of charge other large and valuable spectrum space to convert to digital television. That, of course, is not what broadcasters had in mind when they threw their institutional weight behind the Pickering-Upton plan. So the National Association of Broadcasters is floating a new idea on Capitol Hill. let the broadcasters auction off their analog spectrum, and use the revenues to accelerate the rollout of DTV. The audacity of this idea is breathtaking. After Congress gave broadcasters public airwaves worth $70 billion or far more on the condition that they would return their analog spectrum to the public in a timely fashion, they now want to keep both, auction off one, and pocket the proceeds. The public knows little about this. Even some experts are unaware of the machinations. Not surprisingly, television has not covered it. But the consequences for all of us are staggering. Given the stakes, the power of the players, it will get attention eventually, but if past experience is any guide, only after the critical decisions have already been made. Maybe some reporter somewhere now will decide to focus his or her attention on a potential $200 billion rape of the American taxpayer. There's that word again. Anyway, I have two comments on this one. Comment number one is I am dead set against the concept of auctioning off spectrum space because an auction is a sale. Once it has been auctioned off to a particular organization, that organization owns that chunk of airspace entirely, and presumably the FCC is out of the picture. That means that the revenue stream that the FCC currently receives from licensing fees as radio stations and television stations relicense periodically dries up. Now, perhaps an auction for what the rent on a particular chunk of spectrum might be might work, but I don't know. Secondly, one of the things that was glaring to me in that particular article was the discussion of taking the existing analog spectrum and handing it over to the military. Now, the problem with this is that the analog spectrum and the digital spectrum are not separate spectra. They are one and the same. Channel 2 on the analog spectrum occupies the same chunk of radio spectrum, that being from 54 to 60 megahertz, as it does in the digital spectrum. And basically what they are doing as they make the transition from analog to digital is each TV station has been given an additional channel. For example, I believe if I remember correctly, and I read this a while ago, Channel 23 in this particular area has been granted Channel 4. So what will happen is they will start transmitting in digital format on Channel 4, and sometime later they'll phase out Channel 23. And according to the plan as it stands now, without this all this finagling going on, Channel 23 becomes available for maybe another television station sometime in the future to snap up and use in this area. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what comes of that. But you can't really allocate spectrum to the military if it's scattered all over creation, and it's on this chunk of spectrum in this state, and that chunk in another state, and so on and so forth. How can you do any sort of interstate or inter-area communications even? Let's say, for example, Channel 13 in this area went digital, and they moved to some other channel. I don't know what channel they're moving to, but let's say that they moved to some other channel. Great. So that 6 megahertz chunk of spectrum is available for the military to use here in the Albany, Schenectady, Troy, Rensselaer, Cohoes, Waterville, Del Mar, Selkirk area. This area of the state where Channel 13 covers, these central eastern counties of New York State. Great. Okay. But suppose you go out to the west and you reach Utica, and a television station that was previously broadcasting analog there, say for example Channel 2, got moved to Channel 13 for their digital broadcast. Now you have an interference problem. If you let the military keep the current allocation that they have without trying to co-opt it for 3G services, there shouldn't be a problem. On the flip side, 3G services, like any other type of cellular service, is deliberately short-ranged. Your signal is not supposed to go more than a few miles before it reaches a tower whereupon it's utilized by the network, and the network sends out a signal of appropriate strength that it'll only go a few miles to wherever your handset is. In fact, the tower actually will usually aim the signal straight at you and make sure it's just barely strong enough to be heard by you clearly. Likewise, many cell phones will conserve power by turning down their power when they feel that they're close enough to the tower. Since the range we're talking about is only a matter of miles, we're talking about a 3, maybe a 5 mile radius that a particular tower might be responsible for, you don't have this particular interference concern. Probably not a good idea in the lower chunk of the spectrum, probably not a good idea in channels 2 through 6. They frequencies in that range do tend to travel rather well. But, well, you get the general idea, I think. I think I might be getting a little bit too technical here. So why doesn't somebody bring me back down to earth? 518-276-6248 is the number here at WRPI. I'd like to hear from you. Remind you that the show you're listening to is Little Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter. And the general topic is technology. So if you have your opinions, like I say, give a call. 518-276-6248. We'll put you on the air with me. I've been giving a lot of airtime in the past month or so to the case of Dmitry Skylyarov, who is a Russian computer programmer. Give you a quick recap of it. Skylyarov works for a company in Russia, which is called Elcomsoft. And Elcomsoft works on encryption cracking software. That's what their products are. Amongst their biggest customers are the FBI and the CIA. One of their programmers wrote a portion of a program that would crack Adobe eBooks, and he wrote it well in Russia while working for a Russian company. I keep saying Russia in these sentences because it's most important that you understand that what I'm talking about took place in Russia. Okay, so as long as we're clear on that point, he came to the United States to give a speech at a conference. Upon leaving the conference, as he was checking out of his hotel room, he was arrested for violating the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which forbids the creation of software tools or other tools that might be used to circumvent encryption. And my fundamental problem with this is that the alleged crime that he committed was not a crime at the place and time where the crime was committed. It is a crime in the United States, but he wasn't in the United States when he did it. As an analogy that came up last week, this is equivalent to somebody going up to Canada, smoking a Cuban cigar, leaving all the ashes and the butt there, mind you, coming back to the United States and being arrested for smoking that Cuban cigar. What was done, where it was done, was not a crime. Or more accurately, like a Canadian smoking a Cuban cigar, leaving all of his cigars there and coming to the U.S. and being arrested for it. That's probably an even better analogy. Anyway, what do we have here? I've got actually 3 items I pulled off the web with regard to this. One is a Reuters article that was that I found on Yahoo News, and it says Russia warned its computer experts on Friday that the dangers of visiting the United States after a Russian software designer was arrested here for violating a controversial new law. Last July, Dmitry Skylyarov became the first person to be arrested on charges of selling technology designed to circumvent a 1998 U.S. copyright protection law. Formally arraigned on Thursday, he faces up to 25 years in jail if convicted. This is not this past Thursday, but the Thursday before. Quote, "We want to point out to all Russian specialists cooperating with U.S. firms in computer programming and software design that whatever the outcome of Skylyarov's case, they may fall under the jurisdiction of the 1998 Act on the territory of the United States," end quote, said the Foreign Ministry in a statement. The Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which upholds copyright protection in computer and electronic programs, has sparked controversy among legal experts, although many U.S. businesses favor it. Skilarov, 26, spent 21 days in prison before being freed on bail amid noisy protests by advocates of free speech and other supporters. He pled not guilty. Skilarov has written a program allowing people to use Adobe Systems e-book software to copy and print digital books or transfer them to other computer users. He was arrested while visiting a hackers' convention in the United States. Basically, all the same background information I just gave you a moment ago. Oh, let's see here. From the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Let's see. This was released on Tuesday the 4th. Russian computer programmer Dmitry Skilarov and his employer Elcomsoft appeared briefly in court regarding those charges, regarding charges providing electronic book format conversion software in the United States. At the hearing, described as pretty routine by defense attorney Joseph Burton, the case was continued to 9 a.m. on September 24th in the same San Jose federal court building. The case was continued so that Elcomsoft will have sufficient time to choose their legal representation and so that both prosecution and defense teams may present a joint schedule for motions and discovery in the case. Last Thursday, the court held heard a five-court grand jury indictment against Elcomsoft and previously jailed programmer Dmitry Skilarov on charges of trafficking and conspiracy to traffic in a copyright circumvention device. Skilarov, who is out of custody on $50,000 in bail, could face a prison term of up to 25 years and a fine of U.S. $2,250,000. As a corporation, Elcomsoft faces a potential $2,500,000 fine. Dmitry has programmed a format converter, which has many legitimate uses, including enabling the blind to hear e-books, explained Cindy Cohn, Electronic Frontier Foundation legal director. The idea that he faces prison for this is outrageous. The EFF will support Dmitry through the end of this ordeal. We were hoping that the government would see the wisdom and justice in not pursuing a case against Skilarov, said his attorney, Joseph Burton of Duane Morris in San Francisco. Even if one were to ignore the serious legal questions involving the DMCA, the case hardly cries out for criminal prosecution. Skilarov's and Elcomsoft's actions are not conduct that Congress intended to criminalize. We will vigorously contest these charges. And as I said before, I think these are things that they say Congress did not intend to criminalize these. My feeling is Congress should not have been able to criminalize these things. We are talking about something that was done in a land far away. If we expect them to obey our laws, we expect people in Russia to obey our laws, then it is perfectly in line for France and Australia, both of whom have attempted to impose their laws on the United States, to do exactly that. This is the point where a couple of weeks ago I said, come on, people should be getting angry about this. So how come the phone's not ringing? The number here is area code 518-276-6248, and I would like to hear from you about this. Anyway, I won't cover the third story off of that because it's just covering the same ground again. I need to take a moment. You're listening to Little Brother on WRPI.
Oh, my beloved corporate god, claims they created rock video, allowing it to sink and grow in 1 year, as commercial TV has in 25. It's the new frontier, they say. It's wide open. Anything can happen. But you've got a lot of nerve to call yourself a pioneer when you're too goddamn conservative to take real chances.
Listening to 91.5 FM WRPI Troy. Show is a little brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and the topic is technology. I had a caller a moment ago who didn't wish to participate in the show, but he brought up a really, really good point. It was his feeling that a lot of the issues that we're seeing here, that we're talking about, that we're bringing out into the open here, or trying to anyway. It seems like every time I bring one out into the open, I bump into somebody else who's never heard about it, so I have to bring it up again. But I'll keep bringing these things up and bringing them up and bringing them up until as long as I can and as long as I have to. But the point of view is that people don't get excited about these issues. People don't get excited about these breaches, for example, of national sovereignty, these breaches of common sense, et cetera, because they don't affect them. We geeks are in a serious minority. It affects us because when we see a fellow geek running into a problem, we have a tendency to brace ourselves for the problem when it comes our way. It adds one more thing that we have to watch our back for. And it's really not fun watching your back all the time. But there was a saying, and I wish I could remember how it goes exactly. But let me see if I can remember the gist of it. And I'd greatly appreciate it if one of the listeners out there knows the correct way the saying goes. I'd appreciate hearing it. Even if it's after the show is off. It was something to the effect of, when they came for the Catholics, I didn't stand up because I wasn't Catholic. When they came for the Jews, I didn't stand up because I wasn't Jewish. When they came for me, there was no one left to stand up. If somebody can please remind me how that saying goes in its entirety, I think it fully applies here. People are not standing up right now because the class of people that are getting quashed right at the moment are geeks. Okay? We're not the most social people in the world. I grant that. And what happens is we don't get seen that often. People do not necessarily tend to appreciate us. But when we run into a problem, it's somebody else's problem. This is why I try to get people excited about these issues, because they don't just affect me. They don't affect just Dimitri. They don't just affect, if you want to go way back in time, they don't just affect Steve Jackson or Kevin Mitnick or Bernie S. They affect all of us. After they get done taking us down, you're next. Please keep that in mind. I don't know. I'm starting to run out of steam here. So I'm probably going to wrap it up very shortly here. And just run some music for the next little bit. While we're waiting for DJ Toast to come on at 8 o'clock, or 9 o'clock rather, with the main event. You've been listening to Little Brother. Please tune in again next week. If you'd like to send me an email, my email address is critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That address again, critter@verizoneatspoop.com. It's all exactly like it sounds. I'd love to hear from you. And you can send snail mail to the radio station, Little Brother, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. So with that, I'm going to say thanks to everybody who tuned in this evening. Special thanks to everybody that has called in this evening. It's been a lively evening. We'll see you down the road. This next song seemed like a particularly apt way to close out. This is Lightning Seeds, All I Want.